My darling, the carriage awaits. The Duchess herself will be there. But what if he's already in the ballroom, waiting?
Sorry, are we getting off here?
Huh? Oh, no. Next stop.
Lose yourself in a thrilling romanticy story. Think again. Take the train with Southeastern. Choose from our range of tickets. Buy direct from us and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
Everybody, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, Jacob Rudner, the Baseball America College podcast, and it's here. It's here. We are going to talk about, we are going to review the Super Regionals, but most importantly, we're going to spend the time this week on the college podcast doing exactly what you all want us to do, which is we are going to talk about the eight teams who are in Omaha. We are going to look at those teams in a variety of ways and preview, get you ready for Friday and Saturday's games and beyond. Jacob is getting ready to head to Omaha. Good to see you guys. But man, not every series was great, but we did truly have some all-timers, I felt like, Jacob. There was some truly compelling drama this past weekend in the Super Regionals.
There was, and I was on the radio yesterday. Today's Tuesday, June 9th. I was on the radio on Monday, and somebody asked me, you know, does this Super Regional round prove that parity is dead? And I was like, hold on now. Let's just pay attention to the entire tournament. So if you're catching yourself having some tunnel vision, some very recent, some recency bias as to how you feel about this tournament, I do think that this is still a tournament that's proven that parity is alive and well. But at the end of the day, yes, this was a lopsided Super Regional field, and it is a lopsided Omaha field for the SEC. This is the best showing ever by a single conference in College World Series history. They have five teams in the College World Series field. It's a dominant showing. It was a dominant showing. I think that's the theme of the Super Regional round, and we'll see, but I think it could be the theme of the College World Series too.
We had a piece up yesterday at baseballamerica.com. Well, 2 days ago, by the time you yesterday, by the time you get this, but that kind of amazing stat, 11 of the 16 SEC teams have now made it to Omaha in the past 3 years. That's a remarkable stat. And I would say even maybe more remarkable is that we are looking at, in addition to the fact that we know that we will have an SEC team playing in the title series, I should say, for the ninth straight College World Series, but also on top of that, 14 of the 16 SEC teams have made it to Omaha this decade. Like, it is not something where it is, you know, we've had stretches in the past where you had a dominant LSU, you had a dominant Southern Cal for many years, Arizona State. You had these teams that were carrying kind of a conference, you know, a lot of times. Right now, like, every single team in Omaha this year, obviously, since no one even made it to Super Regionals from last year's CWS, but every Omaha team this year for the SEC is a completely different team from last year's SEC teams and largely different from the teams from 2 years before, you know, 2 years ago. So it's something where it's a blender and it's spitting out different SEC teams, it feels like, every year. Jeff, to you, is there anything that really jumped out watching those Super Regionals games? Anything that really surprised you or stood out, like, oh, okay, that you're going to take into Omaha?
It was tough because, I mean, outside of that absolute war of a series between Georgia and Mississippi State, like, it felt in some ways like both of those teams, I know that, you know, obviously it was a 2-0 sweep, but it did feel a little bit like both of those teams should be in Omaha. I don't know if there were necessarily any surprises. I think Southern Cal gave North Carolina more trouble than I expected. I know I'm not speaking for Jacob there. But overall, I think what we anticipated would happen. Maybe the biggest surprise of the weekend was Ole Miss and, you know, taking down Auburn. But, you know, this is an Ole Miss team that we kind of had said throughout the season on this show was potentially built for Omaha because they're an older lineup. They're more experienced. They have a tremendously experienced but also talented pitching staff. And ultimately, I think that's what could lead to a lot of success. And we'll see what happens in Omaha. But, you know, when you have two aces and a guy like Hunter Elliott, who's, you know, had so much college experience, And does a lot of things really well on the mound. Maybe not a great pro prospect, but a really good college player. And you look at that lineup, kind of 1 through 9, they can bang. They weren't the hottest team in the tournament, over the last month, but really kind of hit their stride over the last couple of weeks and continue to be a dangerous team. So I don't think there were a lot of surprises. And for me, at least, there weren't a ton of huge takeaways. I think a lot of what we anticipated would happen happened. And with a lot less drama outside of, that singular series.
I would say those two, because I would say that those two series, Georgia, Mississippi State and UNC, sure, USC, were both exceptional. For Ole Miss, it is crazy that they have Kate Townsend could go in the first round. They didn't even need to pitch him because they won it in two games. They had him sitting there ready for game three. But before we kind of move looking ahead, Jacob, I did want to ask you about that UNC-USC series as well, because that to me was a series that was absolutely back and forth. Plenty of expected, and I would also say plenty of unexpected. I didn't expect, if you'd have told me that Mason Edwards, who really has kind of struggled a little bit late in the season, but if you'd have told me that Mason Edwards would kind of get beaten around a little bit in game one, and then you say, but Southern Cal won that game. And then you would say, okay, DeCaro goes out and just shoves in game two, sets up an all-timer, and I do feel like it really, that one lived up to every expectation we could hope for.
Yeah, I mean, I think that series was aligned with a lot of the expectations for it that were set during the postseason, meaning I think that USC has never been, there's a segment of last week's podcast where we effectively laid it out exactly as it happened. USC was not a very prolific offense throughout the regular season. We saw in the College Station Regional that they were really good. And then they go to Chapel Hill. They show that off in the first game. It allows them to overcome, as you mentioned, the bad Mason Edwards start. And then North Carolina gets rolling. I think that there was a moment in our Baseball America Slack where all of us jumped in there after Jason DeCaro's complete game, the first elimination game complete game since Kumar Rocker threw an NCAA tournament no-hitter in 2019. That felt like when UNC won the series. And I know that it required a late comeback and a heroic four doubles performance from Owen Hall, just the third four double performance in the NCAA tournament ever. But it felt like UNC kind of won the series on Saturday. I think that Jason DeCaro did a lot for the team's momentum. I think that he did a lot for his personal momentum. I know that there are some evaluators who have had questions about, the gas tank on DeCaro, on the velocity never really ticking up over the last couple of years. And he was out there in the ninth inning pumping 95 and around the strike zone. So we look for the big performances in the College World Series and in the road leading up to it. That to me felt like the most defining one so far this postseason. And I think that it gave North Carolina a lot of momentum. That was a fun series.
That's my one other takeaway I wanted to add before we move on to the College World Series, which is Owen Hull's a perfect example of this. I know that there are a lot of people who kind of decry the current modern environment with free transfers left and right and NIL and, the game's changed and all that. But one of the ways that it has changed, I would say, in a positive way, are players like Owen Hall. Owen Hall spent 2 years at George Mason, if I remember right, but wanted to be a Tar Heel, proved that he was like, hey, this is the guy you want on your team. We see a lot of that in this, obviously. I would say that, even North Carolina, which is kind of one of the lesser transfer heavy teams, has players who it's like I don't think it's a bad thing if we could get into a world. I've spoken about this on the podcast before. I had people on to talk about this. If we get in a world where 15 and 16 year olds realize that it's not all about getting that offer from the school you want to go to on day one of your, of eligibility going into your junior year, but it's much more about developing as a player. And hey, if you are the player that if you develop into the player you want to be, those opportunities are going to arise. And maybe that means that you play somewhere else for a year or two, but seeing players kind of get the opportunity and then take advantage of those opportunities to become stars. Daniel Jackson, we're talking about that, did not begin his career at a Power Four school. We could go down the list of these, but that is something where it is cool for me to see these players kind of emerge and become stars.
Yes, I agree with that, but I do think that it's worth mentioning, and I'll speak for the mid-major coaches who are listening to this podcast. I know that there are a lot of coaches who are out there who rightfully believe that if those stars were to stay at home, then they would then have the firepower to go on a run in their own conferences and go and do something like what Troy is doing right now, where they're playing in the College World Series. They've built a roster in some part with their own transfers. They've done a really good job of kind of cleaning up with guys who have left high majors and bringing them in and kind of giving them a new life. But at the same time, they've got guys like Jimmy Janicki, who I guarantee you they're sitting there and talking about how great it is that that guy took a bet on Troy and didn't go and take his very clearly high major talents to an SEC school or something of the like. So to your point, yes, it is cool to go and see the Owen Hull success stories where, you know, they move up in the college baseball world and they become, you know, overnight stars because of a single performance. It's awesome. That being said, I do think that, you know, there is reason to give voice to some of the mid-major coaches who are doing a really good job out there and holding on to some of these guys and proving that that can go a long way too.
But okay, so we've looked at the super regionals, but we're going to spend the bulk of this. We want to talk about the teams who are in Omaha. We're going to look at all eight teams. We're going to look at who we think are the favorites to win it, what each team's kind of secret weapon could be. And we'll do that right after this quick break.
My dog Bella would do anything for a treat, and I want to give her a treat that will take care of her long term.
And a quick message from today's sponsor, the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. If you're frantically looking for what to do with your pup when they have an issue, the program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier to get your pet the care they need. When you enroll in an ASPCA Pet Health Insurance plan, you could get a $25 Amazon gift card. It's a little treat for you while you're doing something great for your pet. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/foul. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/FOUL. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit aspcapetinsurance.com/Amazon terms for more info. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
And we're back. So let's dive in. How we're going to do this is we're going to talk about each team, same categories for each team. We are going to focus on what it would mean for them to win. We are going to focus on kind of the stars to watch. And then we are also going to look at kind of a secret weapon for each team, something to watch. It could be a player. It could be an aspect of how they play. But we're going to start. We're going to go in order of the games. So we will start, speaking of Troy, Jacob, I'll probably tee off with you on each of these. And so let's just start with, I will say, if you're Troy, like, this sounds even really fun to even consider. What would it mean to Troy if they're dogpiling at the end of the College World Series?
Yeah, kind of a needs no explanation one right there. This is a house money situation, and these are the most fun. And I will also say, this is a tournament that has a real chance to produce a first-time winner. There are four schools, North Carolina included, that are in the championship right now that are looking for a first title in the Super Regional era. I think that with Troy, this is the torchbearers here for the little guys. This is the team that will carry the flag for the smaller schools that made the tournament and went on runs, but also for, and we've talked about this on the podcast in the past, for the Mercers of the world, for the teams that didn't make the tournament that we had been talking about for the entire season as maybe having a chance to be the underdog and to go on a run like this. I think that every time a school like Troy puts itself in pole position to be the representative for that group, it's a good thing for the game. It proves why, you know, better mid and low major representation on the at-large line is important. And, you know, for every game that Troy can survive and continue to win, that point remains and it's visible in the College World Series. I also think it's important to recognize that if Troy goes 2-Q in Omaha, point proven nonetheless. This is an outstanding run. I'll go back to the phrase that I started this with. This is a house money situation. So if Troy wins it, it's one of the all-time great underdog stories in college baseball, right up there with the, you know, the Fresno States and whatnot. But, you know, lose, and this is still a huge win.
Okay, Jeff, star player. Who's the player that, if you haven't been following Troy this year, who's the player that you need to know about?
Well, Jacob already had mentioned him, but that is Jimmy Janicki. You know, the numbers were phenomenal throughout the year. He's the best hitter in the Troy lineup statistically. Talent wise, hit 341, 413, 648 this year. You know, low strikeout rate, makes contact, hits for some power. It was a 442 wOBA. I think when you look at this Troy lineup, that's the guy that you're probably most scared of. And I think a guy that in, you know, our circles, we know who this guy is. I think nationally, his profile could jump quite a bit, especially if Troy steals a couple games here and he has some big performances. So we're talking about star players. I think that's the guy that you go with.
Okay, Jacob, secret weapon. Again, that could be a player or that could be something that you don't know that like could really serve in Troy's favor here.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say two things then. I'll give you a player and then just something that I think will serve them well. The player for me is lefty Zach Crotchfeldt. He is a senior. He is at his fourth school, and he has been a major weapon for them out of the bullpen. There is a college podcast of old in which Peter and I were talking about some mid-major sleepers, and this is late last year in 2025, and we mentioned Troy specifically because Zach Crotchfeldt had shown some signs of potential resurgence in the fall. He has a 3.5 ERA entering the College World Series over 61 and two-thirds innings. He's got 74 strikeouts and 22 walks, and he has proven to be, as I said, a critical piece who can kind of give them some innings. He can miss some bats. He can pitch in leverage, and in theory, and this sometimes becomes a factor in the College World Series, it would not be a surprise to me if he ended up starting a game for them and provided some innings that way too. So super versatile pitcher. Those kinds of guys are really important for the underdogs. You got to have somebody with like loud stuff who can go out there and miss bats. And I think that Zach Crotchfeldt is your X factor individual weapon.
Okay. Moving on to West Virginia, the team that they will play, that Troy will play in their first game. I feel like that this one, I'm going to come your way, Jeff, first on this. I feel like that West Virginia is the team of all the teams here who there's probably maybe the most kind of separation between if you are a fan who follows your team or whatever and what you think this team is and what this team actually is. Like, I feel like that this is a team that has a couple of stars who are already stars, again, if you really follow this, but who are really going to kind of open your eyes if you have no idea, if you couldn't name a player on the West Virginia roster right now.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, it certainly helps when you have a super fan like Pat McAfee, who's in the front row kind of promoting the sport and your team. And I thought, like, just kind of an aside here, you know, the moment where you have everybody singing Country Roads, like what a phenomenal experience in that super regional for a school like West Virginia. And, you know, I think I was a doubter for certain points of the season. Down the stretch here, they've continued to kind of pass every test. And there's a few names here, but I think the big one is obviously Gavin Kelly. He's arguably one of my favorite pro prospects on the position side in college baseball right now. Had a phenomenal year, led all of Division I in total barrels. So just kind of gives you perspective of how good the hit tool is, honestly. I think we talk about barrels more from a power perspective, and that's how it's discussed. But this is a guy that makes a lot of contact. There's really good swing decisions. And part of hit tool for me is kind of having enough power to hit the ball hard enough the ball actually drops, but also hitting the ball at good angles. That shows me barrel control. And I think no one may have sort of the level of barrel control with all those other attributes within his profile, like Kelly does, can provide valuable defense at multiple positions. And then you look at the underlying numbers, hit 384, 484, 720 this year. That's a 1204 OPS on the season. Walked more than he struck out. And, you know, is just one of the best players remaining, you know, in the College World Series and one of the best guys that you're going to watch this week. The other guy I want to throw a shout out to here on the hitting side is Sean Smith. He's had some really big hits down the stretch here for that team. And I think kind of gets a little overshadowed a little bit by Gavin Kelly, but is also a really potent bat in that lineup and somebody that has been producing, you know, some really big hits for them down the stretch here in the tournament.
So, Jacob, a star player we just hit, he's Gavin Kelly. Gavin Kelly is our number one prospect, college prospect for the 2027 draft, as Jeff just laid out. He's got played catcher and second base, athletic catcher. He does a little bit of everything. But so, secret weapon, who comes to mind or what comes to mind for them?
You know, I think that this West Virginia team has a chance to do damage with its offense based on the way that it's playing. So I'm going to talk about that group in general. Omaha plays really big. That park keeps a lot of fly balls in. It is pitcher friendly, but it also requires teams to be very efficient offensively. And that means moving guys over station to station, being able to take your walks. This is a really big one. It's an underrated one, but every coach in the College World Series talks about it. If you get the day game, which Troy, West Virginia is, the shadows in that ballpark are really, really tough, and it creates strikeouts for pitchers. So teams that are going to be super disciplined, that know what they're looking for, that are going to be able to play that station-to-station game with a lot of contact, with a lot of good athletes, those are the teams that tend to fare pretty well. And when you combine West Virginia's proven ability to do that, plus the fact that it's going to pitch the ball pretty well, Max Yell was a real pitcher of the year contender for us this year with a mid to low twos ERA. Chanson Cole was outstanding against Cal Poly, despite being kind of a lower velocity, bigger pitchability right-hander, low slot right-hander. This to me is a team that's sneaky to go win the whole thing. I just think that the way that they play fits super well to what Omaha demands of you, both in terms of having the depth of pitching staff, but also the way that they play offense and kind of the ability that they have to avoid some of the potholes that this specific venue can create. And I think that that will bode well. So yeah, West Virginia's ability to be disciplined offensively and to continue to play athletic station-to-station elite, kind of execution baseball is going to be important.
So that'll be the first game. Then we head over second game on Friday, the night game on Friday. We just talked earlier about North Carolina, how they dramatically advanced, edged out. I forgot one thing on the, I want to finish with West Virginia. I skipped one thing. Jacob, what would it mean for West Virginia to win it all?
Same thing. And we don't have to spend too much time on it. Mm-hmm. It's another first time winner potentially. And any of these teams that have a chance to do that is huge. I think that not necessarily in the same like torchbearer for the little guy type way, but I do think that there is a Selection Monday trend that has been kind of, against the Big 12, if you will. That is not a conference that has gotten the benefit of the doubt on Selection Monday on the host line. Obviously, West Virginia going on a run here would be good for the conference, especially after Kansas bows out against an SEC team as a host. I think that probably reinforces the wrong message if you're about spreading out the tournament representation. And so West Virginia representing a conference here that could use a little bit of a boost.
So that leads us into North Carolina. And I did want to bring up, I'll kind of kick it again to you, Jacob, but I do feel like with North Carolina, winning it all would be the culmination of it would basically cement North Carolina as one of the college baseball dynasties of the 21st century so far. They haven't won it all. They've been there twice. They've been runner up twice, back 06-07. But this is 9 appearances in Omaha since 06. This team's kind of been a consistent power. They've done it now with multiple coaches. They've done it with producing star after star. But there's that one aspect of it that they haven't been able to do. How important would that be for North Carolina?
Yeah, I think that for North Carolina, there is, I think in reality, that is a team that is widely viewed as one of the powers of this era of college baseball. I think to exclude them from that conversation would be borderline blasphemous. That being said, not having a championship is tough. Not having an ACC champion in quite some time, and only 2 of those ever, is really tough for that conference. And so North Carolina carries that weight this postseason. They don't have a championship themselves. It's one of the 2, very high-profile teams that doesn't have one, Alabama being the other. And I think that you know, that is the thing that you ultimately have to check off. And for Scott Forbes, there are a few coaches who have had more success. This isn't out there at the time of us recording it, but my very strong expectation, my inkling is that Scott Forbes is going to get a little bit more money and maybe a couple more years tacked onto his deal, which was extended before the season started. So popular guy, really good team, really well-coached team. And this is now the opportunity to go and check off that final really big tally, and that's the championship. So it means a lot. I think that for a fan base that's a little bit tortured in terms of its success, this would be getting a big monkey off their back, and it's a team that's capable of doing it.
Jeff, I'll come back to you. This is picking a star player for North Carolina is tough because I would say this is both a team that doesn't have one overwhelming star, but also has like seven or eight really good players.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. All throughout the season, you kind of look at their lineup and, you know, I do a lot of our data breakdown stuff and, you know, I'm digging into barrel leaders and EVs and, you know, expected stats and all that nonsense that Manny Machado thinks that I just made up in my basement. But I think at the end of the day, I come back to Owen Hull. Hull has had an excellent season. We talked about him as somebody that, you know, North Carolina was able to get in transfer portal and has really kind of helped to transform that lineup. You know, led the team in WOBA at 469 this year, hit 390, had a 505 on base percentage. Anytime I see a 500 on base percentage, it just blows my mind. It's like little league numbers that he put up. It's not crazy power. It's there. The raw EVs are there, but I wouldn't describe him as a home run hitter, a sub 200, just barely a 199 isolated slugging. But he's a guy that walks more than he strikes out. He gives you good defense, in the outfield, can make contact, can work deep into counts, really makes pitchers work to get him out. So when I'm looking at all these names and guys that have had good seasons, you know, Schaffner, Winslow, Paulson, Gallagher, some of these guys, it's still Hull that I kind of come back to. In my head, it's a conversation between him and I know what, you know, DeCaro did this week. It's a conversation between him and, you know, potential freshman pitcher of the year, Caden Glauber, who's just been so important to this North Carolina team, kind of as this piggyback starter, fireman kind of reliever, kind of harkening back to what, you know, relievers and your relief ace was like back in like the 70s or early 80s, where he'll go four or five innings. That gave him the start this weekend. I know he gave up a couple of homers, but was pretty phenomenal throughout that performance, especially when you think he is a freshman. So I would kind of throw out that he's kind of maybe 1B when we're talking about who the stars are here. But I think you kind of encapsulated everything with North Carolina well, saying that there's probably seven or eight guys that we could mention within this conversation, because they don't have that maybe shining guy, but they're as deep of a roster of talented, good players who are going to have pro futures as just about any team in college baseball, and certainly just about any team that's remaining in Omaha.
So, Jacob, secret weapon, or really the secret thing that could carry this team?
Yeah, we've seen what North Carolina looks like when its pitching is really at its best. And there is a group at the top of that staff that I think is super important. That is their entire rotation, and Caden Glauber, those four guys. If one quarter of that pie doesn't show up, I think that the going gets really tough for them, because there is a significant drop off just in quality of stuff and you know, efficacy and consistency beyond those top four names in their pitching group. And so I think that innings from those names, significant leverage innings, will be critical to a deep North Carolina run. Without that, I think that you probably end up stretching your pitching staff a little bit thin. And it's just not an environment where you can have a significant step down. So either somebody's going to have to do some surprising work and really step up, or the key to North Carolina's success will be lengthy starts and kind of these like heroic pitching performances. And I think
you cannot undersell how important this first game is, right? Like, yep. Win the first game, especially win those first two, pitching's never a problem until because win the first two, you stay on schedule, your bullpen's rested, everything's
there, off days built in.
Lose that first game, and you better have one of the deepest pitching staffs we've seen to get out of it. Or, as you said, have heroic performances from players you don't expect. But if there is a team to kind of just take this to the next one, like we just talked about, that Ole Miss has three starting pitchers who are really just, I would say, you feel very good with them on the mound. But before we get to talking about that, we should lay it out. Again, this is an easy question. In every case, it's an all-timer, but Ole Miss has won it already this decade. I do feel like for Ole Miss, Jacob, winning it again takes them to a whole nother level than where a very successful, very strong SEC program already is. But getting that second one, that puts you in a whole different category.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I'm trying to cull up the stats here. I have the you'll come back to me before we move on from this, from Ole Miss. But it's a very short list of coaches who have won multiple championships in their career. It's an even shorter list of guys who have done it in a very short turnaround. Ole Miss, of course, won it in 2022. Mike Bianco going for his second title just in the last 6 years. This is a group. I'm going to toot my own horn here a little bit, JJ. In my 30 days before college baseball season, I gave my first 8 for Omaha of the year, and I had Ole Miss in there pretty much because of everything that's gone on for this team. And so it's proof of concept. That is to say that this is proof of concept. If you're Mike Bianco, who I think after the championship and the years immediately after that, maybe kind of wandered a little bit, just as the college baseball landscape was changing and how you put together a successful roster was evolving very rapidly. And there was a time after Ole Miss won it all where, and just for what it's worth, I think there were a lot of Ole Miss fans who will have to do some soul searching now who were calling for Mike Bianco to move on because it wasn't going well immediately. And so this to me is a show that what they're doing is working again, and they're back on the right track in terms of who they're bringing in and how they're developing pitchers and the style of roster that they want to put together. It's very validating. Plus, of course, there is, and I'll find it here in a second when Jeff is filibustering for me, I will find the historic level of achievement that this would be for Coach Bianco if they're able to win it again.
So, okay, Jeff, star player for Ole Miss.
Well, Jacob asked me to filibuster, so I'm going to try while hoping that I pronounce words correctly. I think you have to go with Ole Miss's pitching staff here. Taylor Rabe and Cade Townsend have been phenomenal throughout the season. At different points, it feels like Rabe has kind of been the guy down the stretch here. Earlier in the season, it was Cade Townsend. They're both guys that are probably going to go 30 to 50 picks in the draft. And I just think when you can roll two players like that, two starters like that out that are college ace level pitchers, it's just such a differentiator. And it's hard for me to kind of pick one of the two because the numbers have been so similar. The performance has been so similar, depending upon who you talk to among pro evaluators, they might like one more than the other. But I do think you look at this Ole Miss pitching staff and kind of what these guys can do, some of the depth that they have in the bullpen with guys like Hooks and Calhoun, Robertson. Liebert hasn't performed as well as some of those other guys, but has also, pitched some big innings. They have some depth here. So, I do think that's one area where they really stand out. And because of how close and how equally talented these two pitchers are, it's very hard to pick one from the other.
So, okay, Jacob, to kick it back to you, the answer to your question, how many have won two?
He would be the 18th. Coach to win multiple titles, at least two titles.
Okay, but also secret weapon. What is the other thing, something that you should watch for with this Ole Miss club?
It is no secret, but it is the weapon. It is the biggest thing that will determine how far this Ole Miss team can go in Omaha, and that is how much they're going to strike out. It's that simple on offense. Are they going to swing and miss a whole bunch and strike out a whole bunch? If they do, they could lose two games and go home. If they are going to put together some disciplined at-bats and they're going to keep the whiffs to a minimum, as Jeff said, this is a team that can do a ton of damage quickly in the tournament and make a run. I think that if you are Ole Miss, nothing can save you more than just taking some disciplined ABs, because this is a boom or bust lineup. This is a team that has lived and died all year by the home run. If they are going to do that, which it would be weird for them to change up all of a sudden, in Omaha, you're going to need a lot more boom than you can have bust. It is not the kind of ballpark that affords you many opportunities to survive games by swinging and missing a whole bunch. It was the downfall of Florida in that College World Series against LSU. There were a couple of record-breaking strikeout performances, sunk them. We've seen many teams come through that field and sink because of strikeouts. That is the X factor for Ole Miss, is whether or not they're going to swing and miss a bunch.
I think you are asking a dog to become a cat there, to be honest, yeah. Because this is a team that is the second worst team in Division I baseball during the regular season at contact rate. When they swing, they miss more than anyone else. Now, you could get on a run, but at the same time, we know that they are going to swing and miss because that is part of what they do.
I have loved Ole Miss from the jump. As I said, that is a team that I predicted to go to the College World Series before the season even began. You cannot call me a hater. No hype video can include this. I'm safe this week when it comes to the Rebels. I've loved this team. But I will now be on record to say this is not a style that wins well in Omaha. We will see. Maybe, as JJ said, a run is possible. You know, you get hot at the right time. You make contact with the right pitch. You whiff on the right pitch. We'll see what happens. But historically speaking, even a team that pitches this well has a very hard time keeping up in Omaha because it just does not provide enough home runs for this style to survive.
So that is our look at the first bracket. After this break, we'll come back and take a look at the other bracket.
My darling, the carriage awaits. The Duchess herself will be there. But what if he's already in the ballroom, waiting?
Sorry, are we getting off here?
Huh? Oh, no. Next stop.
Lose yourself in a thrilling romanticy story. Think again. Take the train with Southeastern. Choose from our range of tickets. Buy direct from us and pay no booking fees. Southeastern.
And we're back. So we're moving over to the other side of the bracket. And kind of already talked about this a little bit, Jacob, but I feel like for Alabama, has not been to the College World Series this century before this, 1999. Alabama is the SEC team here who you're like, okay, this would be, again, it's big for any of these teams, but for Alabama, this would be, hey, welcome to the club. We've got your jacket here. You're a national champion.
Sure would. Yeah. And I also will, take this time to eat some crow on the podcast. This is the team I was the most wrong about this year. There will always be one. Somebody is usually good for a surprise. And this year that was Alabama. I did not have the Crimson Tide projected into the tournament even in my initial field of 64. They were my 13th SEC team. And I projected the league to get 12 this year, which was true. But it turns out that Alabama did not have an issue of floating around that line. This is a team that has performed at the right times. We have seen it have some lower moments, but when it's mattered the most, this has been a very consistent group. And so I got them wrong. The pitching has been very good. I think some of the older names that they have on that roster have been of major benefit to them, kind of in the same way that it has for Ole Miss, that the experience has kind of shined through a little bit. It would be very meaningful. Another potential first-time champion in Alabama, and a team that has consistently proven itself against the highest level competition. So this feels like actually a pretty sure bet if you're into that kind of stuff. Like if you're going to go and place a bet on a team that just is steady and easy to believe in, I think that Bama and North Carolina could be good examples of that. They've performed again in high moments, and this is one. So, just a really effective group that has done enough at the right times. Is it the most powerful team in the field? No. Is it the best offensive team in the field? No. Are they prone to streakiness? Yes. but they are certainly capable of being very effective at the high end of those kind of ebbs and flows. And right now they are certainly at a peak.
Jeff, star player for Alabama. Again, we have a couple of nice options, but there's a couple here. But I would say that obviously Justin LeBron has been the biggest name here, but is he the star to you or is there someone else?
No, I think if you're really looking at this from a college baseball perspective, what have guys done in season? LeBron is probably down as 4-5 maybe in terms of like the guys that have been the most important this year. I'm going to go with Tyler Fay, who is, you know, sort of their Friday night guy, tall right-hander, really deep pitch mix. He throws a four-seamer in like the 92 to 94 range. He throws a two-seamer in the same range. He mixes in a cutter. He mixes in a slider. He's got a pretty good changeup as well. That's good vertical separation off of his fastball. His big issue throughout the season has been home runs. Historically, home runs in Omaha are not something they are at a premium. The ball does not fly there the way that it's flying in a lot of these SEC parks, particularly Georgia, after watching that series this weekend. I think that he's sort of the guy that can go really deep into a start. Maybe not the most exciting pro prospect, but in terms of a guy that you can put out there in your first start and can really save your bullpen by being really efficient, getting a ton of outs on the ground, striking some guys out, throwing strikes, and getting deep into his starts. I think that Fay is kind of the guy. On the positional side, I think it's another four-year college player and one that had quite a bit of hype when he first came into college baseball, and that's Brady Neal, the senior catcher. He's had a phenomenal season offensively. He has been the best hitter on this kind of underwhelming Alabama lineup and compared to even, you know, the other seven teams in Omaha. This, I believe, is the only team that was, there was maybe one other team, I think it was West Virginia, that was outside the top 50 in team WOBA over the last month. And Alabama is the only team that's outside of the top 70. They're actually outside of the top 100 in terms of performance in WOBA. So a lot of it has been pitching, good defense, timely hitting, and that sort of thing. So that's why I ended up going with Fay. But I think kind of the runner-up here is Neal, because I can't just pick one player, JJ. I'm really bad at that. Decisions are not my strong point.
Okay. So you said, Jacob, this is a team that has surprised you. This is a team that you're like, okay, maybe I missed something here. Speaking of what other teams might miss, what is a secret weapon, something that Alabama could kind of do to ride to their first title?
Yeah, I'm going to cut against the secretive grain here one more time, and I'm going to give you the most obvious answer, and that is Justin LeBron's performance. It has never been more critical than it will be over the next couple of weeks for him to have some really strong, consistent, reliable performances for his team and also for himself. I think that this is a huge weekend in terms, or a huge couple weekends potentially, to determine whether or not Justin LeBron is going to be a top pick in this year's draft. And by top pick, I mean, is he a top 10 guy? Is he a top 15 guy? Is he a top 20 guy? I think that this College World Series will go a very long ways in determining exactly what that looks like, because he is extremely talented, but how often that talent is apparent, how often the at-bats are great, is scattered. And I think that for Alabama to even have a chance at winning a College World Series title, they will need their best player to be exactly that, their best player. He is a dynamic threat on the bases. He is a dynamic threat in terms of putting pressure on defenses. He does have the kind of power that can leave that yard. And of course, when he's playing at his absolute best, he is a very capable, strong-arm shortstop that can make a difference for you defensively, just with the way that he moves. However, the inverse of all of these things is also equally true. We have seen Justin LeBron go very cold against high-level pitching at times throughout the season. He has struggled pretty much throughout his entire collegiate career against SEC pitching. We have seen Justin LeBron at shortstop have some weeks where it is just miserable defense. One of the most error-prone shortstops in the SEC, if not the country, all season this year. So Alabama needs good Justin LeBron. That is the X factor, in my opinion, for the Crimson Tide.
They will face Oklahoma. Again, this is an all SEC bracket. We're going to be talking a lot about SEC teams here. They will face Oklahoma. This would be for Oklahoma, not their first title, but it would be that their first SEC title. Obviously, they're a recent team to join the SEC. But Jacob, what would be the significance of a title for Oklahoma?
Yeah, I think Oklahoma is just kind of another option here for the SEC's historic aspirations. The SEC looking for its seventh straight title. The SEC has five teams. It's the most ever by a conference in the College World Series field. And Oklahoma is one of its horses and arguably its hottest horse. They have taken a very challenging path to this point, beating Georgia Tech, then surviving the Super Regional at Kansas, which was, truth be told, expected, at least by me, expected to be an environment where Kansas was going to do a whole lot of damage in the air and leave the park a whole bunch and hit home runs. And it turns out that it was Oklahoma that did that for the second consecutive weekend. This is a team that was not particularly powerful during the regular season. And all of a sudden it has a 90 plus average EV and a 105 mile per hour, 90th percentile EV as a team over the last two weekends. And so the significance here is that it would be the first SEC title. It's further proof of concept, for all of the good things that Skip Johnson has going on there, especially on the pitching side. And then, of course, for the SEC, this is one of your dogs in the fight, and only one of them can survive this side of the bracket. It will be an SEC team guaranteed. And the question now is, if Oklahoma does that, are they the most strong team, the strongest team to go and beat somebody from the other side?
Okay, Jeff, I'm not even going to ask for a star player now because you give me two every time. So star players for Oklahoma.
I'm actually going to give you one this time, Jay.
Keep me on my toes.
Maybe in terms of the numbers, it's not the top guy that you would throw out there. I think if we're going on just sort of pure performance this year, Deaton LeChance has probably been the star player. But it feels like in every big moment, Jacob and I are texting back and forth with Peter from, Beyond the Grave and all the folks inside of the BA Slack about Cam Johnson. He was a guy that I got firsthand sort of looks at throughout the summer with Kituit and was a consistently clutch player. He seems to always come up with the biggest hits in the biggest moments. He's twitchy. He's explosive. He's a really heady player as well. Excellent base runner, just little things like that that can make the difference for this team. And I feel like I constantly go back to sort of Cam Johnson as the guy here, who's really the star player to watch. Cause I just think he's a joy to watch when he's out there and does a lot of things really well on the field. Even if he doesn't put up, the highest numbers of all the guys in this lineup, he is a really exceptional player and somebody that I think could have some really big moments in Omaha.
Okay, Jacob, secret weapon for Oklahoma.
No question, it's the offense. Is this group going to continue to hit the way that it's been hitting? Because one of the things that we talked about with Oklahoma going into the tournament, and quite frankly, one of the reasons that we didn't think it would survive Atlanta, was because this is just not a great offensive team. They don't hit home runs very often. They entered the NCAA tournament with 65 on the year, which was 94th in all of Division I. It's also not a particularly great contact team. They strike out a pretty decent bit. They're not one of the heavier impact contact teams, but their strengths have always been that they're going to run super well throughout the roster. Jeff mentioned Camden Johnson, potential 80 runner, at the pro level. There are a couple of other guys who are plus, if not double plus runners on this roster, and now they're putting the ball over the wall. As we've talked about ad nauseum already, you can't rely on the long ball in Omaha, but this is not a team that was relying on it in the first place. So it's easy to feel good about a group that is athletic and can hit the ball over the wall when needed and to kind of punish a mistake, but to also play station-to-station aggressive baseball. Maybe this is the kind of offense that is hot at the right time and it gets into an environment that it's well-suited for and Oklahoma is able to hold on. But if it does, it will be because that's exactly what happens. The offense is a good fit for where they're going to go play.
I'll just kind of along the lines of what you said. For the season, for the regular season, Oklahoma by far had the highest ground ball rate of any of the teams going to Omaha. You can look at that two ways, right? You can look at that because they've been a little bit more home run prone in recent weeks. They've hit the ball in the air more often. That's a good thing. But at the same time, you could also argue if you are playing in Omaha on a day where the ball is just not going to leave the yard, then maybe there's some advantage to that as well. We will see. Okay, now I don't want to prejudge our predictions or anything like that, but we got the Georgia-Texas. This is the final game of the first games. But Jacob, am I right to say, as we kind of lead into this, I feel like that this is the main event. These are, you know, two of the three highest rated teams that remaining national seeds wise. And I do feel like whoever wins this game, I feel like is on a very good path, but someone also has to lose it.
Yeah, no, I think that that's what's at stake here. If you're the winner of this game, you are arguably, if not definitively, the best position to go win the College World Series. If you are the loser, I will also add, I don't think that the path is that bleak because these are teams that play stylistically like you've seen before. I think both of these teams are strong enough to crawl out of the loser's bracket if it comes to that. But yes, to your point, this is the matchup that I think produces our favorite, and it will require an upset to slow them.
So, okay, I'll start with story time. We're going to talk about Georgia, and I'll start with very quick little digression, which is I can exactly tell you when the last time that Georgia won the national title is, because that was 1990. And I then stepped onto campus at the University of Georgia as a freshman right after that. And I got to cover the Georgia baseball team for the competing student paper as a freshman, because they were desperate for anyone who could just basically was willing to do it. And I'm like, I can't believe it. I'm getting to cover the defending national champions. I believe their record that year was 27-31. I learned a lot about how to cover a team where when you went down for post-game quotes, everyone was angry to see you. It was a growing experience. I digress. So we know that they've already won it once, but they've also come close because they obviously lost to Fresno State in the championship series in 2008, last time they made it to Omaha. But what would winning a national title mean for this Georgia team?
It's been a long time coming. I think reputationally, this is a big moment for Georgia just because there has been some slippage over the last couple of decades from a team that was equipped to go and compete for national titles and did win one to a group that has struggled to get back. As JJ said, I mean, 2008, is the last Georgia Omaha appearance prior to this one. And for Wes Johnson, you know, I think that Wes has done a tremendous job of putting together these rosters that have massive upside, but he's done it in years past at the expense of proven production. They've brought in a lot of real headline transfer names. They've brought in guys who fit their ballpark factors, and he puts together these like really analytically sound offenses with guys who lift the ball and who hit the ball hard and, you know, play to their style. But at the end of the day, on the mound, I think that, you know, the ugly side of that was that the stuff that he brought in wasn't always effective, and it looked really good from a computer standpoint, but didn't always translate to what they needed, you know, from a wins and losses standpoint. And then with the bats, you know, they have done a magnificent job of recruiting to their ballpark and using kind of the science of baseball to put together a lineup. But the second that team has traveled, it's been a real problem for them. Plus, they've kind of run out of gas in the postseason. So this is a team that's different in that I actually think that it is built to, you know, really succeed, obviously, you know, proven by the fact that they're in Omaha right now. But the stuff has translated to results. Joey Volchko has transformed into a reasonably reliable frontline SEC caliber starter. Matt Scott, who has been a real roller coaster from, you know, top prospect to falling star prospect at Stanford to somebody who's now a multi-inning reliable reliever. Caden Aoki has had a great postseason. It's an effective staff. And then we've seen this offense travel. They're going to go hit home runs everywhere. They are not solely reliant on putting the ball over the wall in the shoebox that is Foley Field. They can go and they can get on base. Daniel Jackson is a superstar at the center of their lineup. So this is a super well-rounded team. And I think that it's kind of the new platform, if you will, for Wes Johnson roster construction, and kind of will set the tone for how they go about things in the future.
So, okay, Jeff, star player for Georgia. There's a couple you could go, but I think there's one that kind of stands a little bit a cut above everyone else.
Yeah, I think, you know, Daniel Jackson, catcher for Georgia this year. We've talked about him a few times on this show already at the top of the show and then a few moments ago. You know, this is outside of Landon Harrison, you probably argue that from a performance standpoint, this might be the second best hitter in college baseball this year. And the fact that he's still playing, I mean, maybe you want to throw the whole pressure element into it. And they both have ballparks that obviously the ball flies in. So can't hold that against Harrison in that conversation. But I think you look at Jackson, 396, 492, 837 slug. He had 31 home runs this season, 26 stolen bases. I believe that he is the first college catcher ever to go 25-25. Was it even 2020?
Well, yeah, because... Yeah, I mean, he's only basically he's one steal away from becoming the second 30-30 player of all time, him and JD Drew, and he's a catcher.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that kind of puts it all into perspective. And it's been, you know, he's not all world behind the plate, but good enough.
It's not bad.
Yeah. I think it's an average to maybe a tick above when you're thinking about a college catcher. He's a big X factor for them. You know, you got Branch, you got Phelps, you got Lujo. There is a O'Shaughnessy. There's a lot of guys that can bang in this lineup, but Jackson is ultimately who you're going to throw out there as the star.
Jacob, when we come to Secret Weapon, I'm going to preface this. I'm going to ask a question to you because you just hit on it, right? Before we get to Secret Weapon, and maybe this is what your Secret Weapon is, but you just touched on that Georgia has a team like, they have constructed this team, I would say, extremely well, because even if they go 2-Q in Omaha, the goal is to get to Omaha. They did all the work to ensure that they never left Foley Field during the postseason until they go to Omaha. And you could say, oh, see, it doesn't work as well when they go to a park where the ball doesn't fly out as much. It's like, okay, they just won a regional. They just won the SEC regular season. They won the SEC tournament. They won their regional. They won their super regional. They're in Omaha. How much, though, do you think that their approach is going to be challenged by going to TD Ameritrade, where it flies better than it did in 2013-14?
Going to Charles Schwab.
Yes, sorry. Yes, it's changed. Yes.
You know, look, I think that any team that is home run reliant in any way, like we're going to remove the ability to just get on base. We're going to remove the ability to, you know, hit for contact, play station to station. Any team that is reliant on hitting home runs, of which Georgia is one, they are the best home run hitting team in the country this year. That team will have a stylistic change to some degree in that ballpark because of how big it plays. They will get their home runs there. There is always a team that will get its home runs, whether that's them, whether that's Ole Miss, whether it's both. Somebody will do it in this field. We will see big home runs hit. But I think that Georgia this year, and this was kind of my point, is not the same Georgia that we've seen offensively under Wes Johnson to this point. This is a Georgia team that does do it multiple ways. They do get on base. They do challenge you with their ability to steal bases and create offense. They challenge you with their aggressiveness offensively. They are not going to let you try and beat them in the zone. They will meet you at the point of contact, and you're going to have to hope that your defense is in the right position. So I think that they will make the ballpark feel big for other teams. I think that they are going to make defenses run around with how much they're going to put the ball in play. And I also truly believe that they're going to put pressure on pitching staffs to be pretty perfect, just with the threat that they are on the bases. Will it look different? Yes, because the volume of home runs that they get in some of their wins, they will not get in this field. That is a fact. But I do think that a lot of the other things that they do well will kind of supplement, you know, whatever they lose in the home run department.
I think you hit on that. The depth of their lineup. I do think that lineup depth is something that becomes even more important when you get to this point of the season, because there is a lineup where there just really aren't breaks. Theirs is more like that big league kind of lineup where you're like, okay, there is still a little bit of a lot of lineups where you can be like, okay, as a pitcher, you can be like, this is the inning where you don't ramp it down, but you're like, I don't have to worry about these guys really hurting me. There really isn't that in that Georgia lineup. It's going to be fascinating to see, because they are facing again, in game one, they're facing a Texas club that is also, I would say, very well constructed to potentially win it all here. Jacob, Texas is obviously one of the powers of college baseball, and it has been for many, many, many years. Omaha, they know the route. They're not like, oh, wait, you know, what do you do when you get to Omaha? If you're a Longhorn fan, these are all things that you are very well accustomed to. But what would it mean to win it again in the case of Texas?
Yeah, I mean, this is the 39th appearance, College World Series appearance in Texas history. So they are, as you said, no stranger. They were the runner-up in 2009. They were last the winner in 2005. They have gotten that was their sixth championship. So this team has been there before. Different this year is, I think that there's some personal meaning. Jim Schlossnagel has been around this game for a very long time. Of all of the accolades that he has, Baseball America Coach of the Year, SEC Coach of the Year, SEC Champion, Big 12 Champion, Mountain West Champion. He's not a College World Series champion. He's never won a national championship, and he has a lot of wins and a lot of College World Series appearances for somebody that has yet to win it. So, I think that for Jim Schlossnagel, this is an opportunity to kind of get the last ticket, win the last thing that needs to happen. In the same way that we talked about it for North Carolina as a program, I think that Jim Schlossnagel kind of has that personal motivation now to go and get his title and check off one of very few remaining things that are left for a, no doubt, one of the greatest ever Hall of Fame resumes.
Jeff, when we look at star player, again, multiple choices here. And the great thing about it is multiple choices from different classes too. If you want to get your work in, get a head start on your 2028 draft prep, this is a team to watch.
Yeah, man. There's so many options here with Texas. It's hard to honestly narrow it down to one, because I think you have sort of that. Maybe the big three for me in the lineup is Robbins, Tinney, who are both draft eligible this year, should go in the top two rounds, potentially both in the first round. Tinney probably less likely than Robbins. And then Anthony Pack Jr., who's just like one of my favorite players that I covered this year, doing the freshman five every week, struck out to me kind of the first weekend of the season. And I'm kind of the leader of the Pac-Man fan club here. But, and I mean, he's been huge for this team down the stretch. But that said, I thought the second best pitcher in the country based on performance this year outside of Mason Edwards, Dax Whitney got hurt, Logan Redeman got hurt, was Dylan Volantis, jumping from, you know, freshman of the year last year, closer, kind of filled the role that Sam Cozart has filled this year at times for Texas, really made a great leap forward in terms of being their ace. And I don't think at certain points of the season early on, we thought it was Ruger Riojas and others. I think he really cemented himself as their stopper. He barely, like his, I know it's ERA and people, whatever. That number barely went up from what he was doing out of the bullpen. And he threw 88 and two thirds innings this year with 126 strikeouts to 27 walks. It's a 2.03 ERA. It's a 1.78 FIP. So he's actually underperformed some of the ERA estimators, just a tick over one on the whip. And this is in the SEC. I think that's the guy of all these guys, because I think he's the kind of player, the kind of pitcher, and he's 2027 eligible, so he's not eligible this year. He's somebody that could come out and throw an eight-inning gem and strike out 12 and shut down an opposing lineup. I think if, you know, you're getting him as George in the first game, and it's unfortunate that Georgia keeps on facing the best team besides themselves, it feels like that they possibly could in every round. That's a guy that I think strikes a little fear into your heart, because he doesn't just miss bats. He can also drive ground balls at a fairly high rate as well. So I think you sort of look at Volantis, and despite the hitters that they have in this lineup and some really big stars and guys that, you know, are going to get paid millions in pro ball, I think I still go back to Volantis, the fact that he misses the bats that he does and ran a 56.7% ground ball rate. So a 57% ground ball rate, that's elite. And there's just not a lot of guys that can generate outs in a variety of ways that Volantis can. So for me, he's kind of the star that I'd be focusing on when watching this team.
Okay, Jacob, secret weapon for Texas.
Yeah, the secret weapon is going to be lineup depth. This is a team that has some real stars at the top. Jeff mentioned several of them. Whether or not they're going to get some bottom of the lineup production in the College World Series will be super critical. I think one thing with Texas is that for all of its statistical offensive success, a lot of that has been concentrated in the top half of their group, whereas the bottom half has struggled at times. When they're firing on all cylinders and the lineup is playing 1 through 9, this could be the team to beat. I mean, in the field, they are super good. They pitch the ball super well. There's depth to their staff. I mean, Sam Cozart, arguably the best closer in the field, which is really important in the College World Series as well. You know, finishing games is tough in this environment. I mean, this is a very well-rounded team if its lineup is going to be consistent 1 through 9.
So that leads us to this part. It's prediction time. So we have 8 teams. One will emerge as champion. We'll go around the room. I'll start because I feel like I've got the least, I want to hear what you guys say. I'll try to keep mine pretty tight. I said North Carolina last week. I'll stick with that. Not because I think they're the best team here. Let me be clear. I think that Georgia or Texas, those are the two top teams here. However, I'm playing the percentages here, which is if I'm picking one team, if I pick Georgia and Texas wins that opener, and then Georgia's got to beat Texas again twice at some point, probably to emerge out of it. Okay, that's hard to do. Flip the exact same conversation. If Texas, loses to Georgia, then Texas has to beat Georgia. Because again, someone's got to come out of that bracket, and you've got to throw in Alabama and Oklahoma as well. That's to me the tougher bracket here. If I look at North Carolina, I feel like that they're a very good team that has a lineup depth, and has a lineup that's very well suited for Omaha, because as Jacob noted, their pitching staff is going to be great if they win that opener. Got a pretty good chance, I think, to do that, but they need to stay on schedule. But I would say that they have this lineup that is not station to station, but is more like they're a little less home run reliant. It could fit very well for Omaha. But the key thing being, they've got to get through Ole Miss, West Virginia, and Troy, which I just think is an easier path. And if you get to the best of three, you got to get there first. And I think they've got the best chance to get there. So that's why I'm picking North Carolina, even if I'm saying there's a little bit of an asterisk to that. Jeff, what about you?
I'm going with Ole Miss on that side of the bracket. I'm an ACC guy. I want to see the ACC do well. I grew up in a household where we were cheering for Boston College. My father's a double Eagle, so I want ACC teams to do well. Obviously, they weren't historically an ACC team, but I have, the last 20 years, I've transitioned to an ACC fan. I just don't buy it. I don't buy that an ACC team's going to come out of here. I like Ole Miss's ability to hit for power. I think the lineup has been better lately, and then the pitching staff that I talked about. So on that side, that's who I'm picking.
Overall,
I'm gonna pivot a little bit. I think Georgia's had too tough of a path. I had picked them prior to the tournament to kind of win the whole thing. I'm gonna back off that a little bit, and I'm gonna go with Texas. I think that Texas is gonna win the whole thing. I think this team is hitting on all cylinders. I think when you look just kind of pound for pound, player for player, 1 through 9, and then the pitching staff and what they can roll out and kind of how these freshmen have come on, I think that's the best team in the country, and I think it's the best team in Omaha. So I guess, go Horns. Is that what they do? I'm not from Texas. I don't know.
So Jacob, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, if you want my full reasoning, just go back on this podcast and listen to everything I said. But I think that I'll go with my winner overall first. The easy answer is the best answer in this situation. I think that that's Georgia. This is a team that has just been rolling. As I said, I think that they are able to do it in a versatile enough way offensively, where unlike Ole Miss, this is not a home run reliant team. It's a team that hits a lot of home runs, and those two things are very different. I think that Georgia is positioned to play well in this ballpark from a pitching perspective, because if it is going to be in the zone, like Joey Volchko, for example, and they aren't going to miss a whole bunch of bats, which Joey Volchko has not at all times. He has not been a super high strikeout player this year. This is the park to go pitch to contact, for sure. Like, if you have fielders that can go get it, of which Georgia has no shortage, you can go win ball games. And then I just don't know that there's an offense in the field that's going to be able to keep up, even in a place that likes to limit the score. So Georgia to win the whole thing, and I'll agree with you, JJ, with nothing really to add. I think North Carolina emerges from side A, just has all the right things going for it.
That is our College World Series preview. The next time we'll be talking on the podcast. Schedule next week might be a little bit. Yes, go ahead, Jake.
Okay, so schedule. Let's talk about schedule. If you are looking for our college baseball podcast, next week is untraditional. We will not have a normal college podcast episode like you're listening to right now. What we will do throughout the entire College World Series is we will try to go live daily at the end of every day. So once game two concludes, some combination of the people you're seeing here, maybe we get some special guests throughout the College World Series to jump on with us as well. We will jump on for about 15 to 30 minutes, depending on the night, to recap that day's action. So that will take the place of the college pod. The next traditional college pod that you will hear is after the College World Series, when I return home from Omaha. So next 2 weeks, basically daily podcasts. They will be live on YouTube. You can also get them wherever you get your podcasts almost instantly as well. So you don't have to watch us live to catch us, but a little bit different format and a lot more frequently over the next couple weeks.
We got that coming up. So check out everything over at baseballamerica.com. We have so much, and we will keep you updated all through the College World Series. And hey, if you're a college baseball fan and your team's not in it, we also have the transfer portal. We have the transfer portal rankings, a lot there to also get you started looking ahead to 2027. For Jeff, for Jacob, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Yes, thanks. I think that makes sense. Send over the projections and let's sort out next steps. Ooh, that's creamy. Velvety. Mmm, properly good. Simply sensational. Choco-lush. Where have you been all my life?
Sorry, you're not on mute.
I knew that. Shaken Udder milkshakes. The utterly slurpable way to snack. Find it in all major supermarkets.